You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
I lived in a very sleepy central New York town when I went to high school, and it was, you know, not far from the edge of another little sleepy town and another little sleepy town. And one of the things about being close to borders, rivalries start to flare up pretty easily. Now, I was in high school and I played sports, so high school sports rivalries were ludicrous. To me, it's like so funny that you're like, you're from over there, you're like that, we're from 10 miles over here, we're like this. You know what I'm saying? Shelbyville, this is kind of, you know what I'm saying? It's a funny thing. The older I got, the more I dated across town lines, and that was, well, it was kind of good for me, but For a lot of my friends, they were kind of like, what are you doing? You know, dating somebody from over there. They're like that, and we're like this, or, you know, some kind of thing, or like, you know, the different celebrations and stuff. One time I was invited to go with a bunch of dudes, see if this story resonates with you, if you grew up in toxic masculinity too. So my boy Billy had an ex-girlfriend recently, and the new boyfriend in the town 20 miles away was talking junk on him. What is Billy going to do about it? Anyone? Yeah, but even better, get 20 of his friends to go drive up to the bonfire party for a rumble. And ask me, you down? I was like, I love toxic masculinity. I'm down. You know, or whatever. I didn't say that probably, but that was the underlying thing, you know. And to get up and actually go to a party thinking that we're going to brawl with 20 of these dudes from Johnstown. Just a little bit about me, my older brother. There ended up being a little scrape, a little something over there. A lot of the dudes from my town left. But they had girls we didn't know in a keg, so we stayed and hung out and made friends. But that was the younger me. The older me, you know, would handle it in a more mature way. But the political boundaries or any kind of unnatural border, they create problems and opportunities for people living around them or near them. Whether you can transgress that border, whether you can go over the border freely, whether you want to, whether you're unable to. Like we prayed about a couple weeks ago in Northern Ireland and in the northern part of Ireland, it's going to be weird when the UK leaves the European Union and now there's a border that has to be crossed in a new kind of way. You need special permission. The brilliant William Penn had this idea for this holy experiment to exist as a town between two rivers, right? You go across the Schuylkill River, where are you at that point? This isn't a trick question. The Schuylkill River, we call it West Philly most of the time, right? West Philly, you're with me? You know about this? Did I say it wrong? The Schuylkill River? Yes. What are people from West Philly like? They're cool. They're fine. Now, if you have now over here, you've got the Delaware River, and if you cross that river, then where are you?
Jersey.
Yeah, in Jersey. And what are people from Jersey like? They're the best. I got to marry one. Woo. Dave, right? East Orange, stand up. They're just human beings over there. But you gotta, you know, gotta cross a river, you have to pay more money, and to get to Philadelphia, and then gas is more expensive, and you have to pump it yourself. This makes you wonder just how kind of stupid we all are that live here, you know, where you're just like, wait, over there it's cheaper and they do it for you? No, I'm living here, it's better here, you know. Here is good, you know. Well, I'm on this team or whatever, you know, it's so weird. Anyway, you could have a wall built on your town. You could have a wall that separates you from neighbors or relatives. Those are economic trends that are making new walls around here. The new beautiful, it's not beautiful, new construction behind my backyard, you know, that most of you have seen. And I said, you know, there's the thing, the one that I still haven't put a Gandalf mural on. That one's going for, you know, it's listed for $550 right now. Any of you guys got that? want to be my neighbor? You know, it's so weird. That's a new border, right? And they're not going to get that. I know what you're thinking, but like, maybe they will. New borders, and they're made up. They keep people apart, and some people are able to cross them or not. So this is where we get back to the Bible, right? Bible's all kinds of borders and maps and stuff. The first day when I was in seminary and I took a New Testament 1 class, they gave us a quiz on the first day, which I just assumed was not going to be graded because it's like, you haven't taught us anything yet, but it was testing your knowledge before you got there. No, I was wrong. We got graded on it. But like any good seminary student, I didn't really care about my grades that much. But the first thing that we got was a map. And this is like, this is first century Palestine. Where's Capernaum? Where's all the places that Jesus visited? And almost everybody in the class was like, I've read the Bible for years. You can't fill out a map. Because maps are kind of like for people who are into maps. You know, that's not the story, isn't about the border crossings. But so much of the Jesus story especially is transgressing boundaries, transgressing place, defying physics. But even the Bible story, you know, back in the Hebrew Bible, they're at this point in the middle of the book of Judges, they're living in the shadow of the Philistines. As they're coming into this place that they feel God has provided for them, they are not the most powerful. And by the time we get to Samson, they're definitely in the shadow of the political authority of the Philistines. So this brings to this general unease with the Hebrews. And Samson, this whole strong man story is sort of like constantly poking holes into like the, oh, you know, you're a military galactic superpower, but we have, you know, someone even more strong. But this part of the story brings up questions about mobility and agency, as well as how we act when the Spirit of the Lord is upon us. It's another theme that's happening with Sansom. That's his name, I'm sorry. Sansom. I do it with the street too. I just go back and forth. When I first moved here and people were talking about Sansom Street and they would call it Samson Street, I'd be like, you know, you're saying that wrong. But then I realized like it's so wrong that it's right. And now I'm confused with the Bible. So this is Judges chapter 14. This is 10 verses, starting with verse 10. Then Samson, and this is, remember last time, 2 weeks ago, maybe you don't, but Samson walked down the border, saw a lady that he liked, came back and said, Mom and Dad, found a good wife. Go get her for me. That's kind of how that went down. Now the wedding is going down. Then as Samson's father went down to the woman, Samson put on a feast there in her place, in her town, across the tracks. For this is what young men would do. When the Philistines saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. Kind of a traditional wedding ceremony, kind of building up. Samson said to them, let me tell you a riddle. If you can explain it to me within the 7 days of this feast, then I'll find 30 linen robes and 30 sets of clothes to give you. However, if you're not able to explain it to me, then you will give me 30 linen robes and 30 sets of clothes. They said to him, tell us your riddle so we can hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. They could not explain the riddle after 3 days. Parentheses, of partying really hard. Time for the brain busters. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, trick your groom into telling us the riddle, or else we'll burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us to steal what we have? Is that not so? So Samson's wife wept all over him and said, you must hate me. You do not love me. You have told a riddle to the young man and did not tell it to me. And then he said to her, I've not told it to my father and mother. What should I tell it to you? She wept on him for the 7 days of the feast. And on the seventh day, he told it to her because she had nagged him. And then she explained the riddle to her people. So, you know, yeah. Just a couple side eyes. I'm hearing the side eyes. It's going to get worse. And we will address it. So on the seventh day, before sunset, the men of the city said to Samson, "What is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion?" And he said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Then the Spirit of the Lord mightily came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 of their men. He took their clothes and gave them to the ones who had explained the riddle. His anger burned, and he went up to his father's house. So Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. You've read the ancient books before, right? They did marriage a little differently than we're trying to work it out right now. There's some different ideas about how you tell a story for my sensibilities. And there's at least three major violations of that in this text, which makes it challenging to, if nothing else, to just say, okay, there's a weird situation for me. Can God speak through weird situations? Does Samson have to do everything right? See, an example of goodness. Is this how God works or what? So I think that's where I want to go, and let's think about it. I mean, this part of the strong man legend showed up. Not only strength wasn't just brute strength to be able to just go kill 30 dudes at random and steal their clothes, although that's part of it, but this wit and the strength of will. I mean, I doubt that Samson needed 30 sets of clothes or this wealth that they represent. He was taunting the Philistines, his neighbors from across the way. He was in the week-long wedding celebrations with his new wife from the other side of town and demonstrating strength. If you just feel some kind of arrogance about Samson, and then the little euphemisms like "you plowed with my heifer" that bothers you, I think that you're onto something, and you're onto something right and valid, but could be missing something as well. I mean, that kind of misogynistic attitude is still present. It's prevalent, and it needs to continually be addressed, not just in texts, but in conversations with friends especially. Your friends will listen to you way better than strangers, unless you are just super strong or super powerful. The rest of us need to do the work in ourselves and with each other and get some help. But there is this running theme with the Samson story. There, I said it again. His weakness is women. You've interpreted that before? I heard that interpreted. I throw the air quotes because I think that's bullshit. I think rather than seeing women the way we even read it, rather than seeing these women as desperate, as about to have themselves and their father's house burned, being resilient and being clever in the face of this monster kind of dude, you know, we kind of just twist this and be like, well, Samson's the one God loves the most, so everything that he's doing is blessed and cool. Where, like, we're not, the Hebrew people, as they were putting this together, didn't even think like that. There was always this dialogue, this discourse of, yeah, here's a story, and it has problems to it. We need to keep talking about it and keep thinking it through. But so often, we let the story be told as if just Samson's great, and these immoral women keep getting into his ear, and if he could only ignore them, he would get on to greatness. But his first wife is about to lose her family and shows some very critical persistence that I think is an important lesson to us. But however, the folks even that Samson's rolling with, the Hebrew people at the time, are not the United States super military. They are not this dominant force trying to continue the methods of economic exploitation around the world through, you know, globalizing capitalism, neocolonialism, all these other economic theories where we kind of keep trying to convince everybody that the way of life that TV shows teach us is the best way. Beverly Hills 90210 is your ideal life. And if you don't believe that, something's wrong with you. Beverly Hills 90210, anyway? You know that? It's okay. Somebody, you know, text me a different show next time I do this talk. Okay. Let's just take a pause. There's some heavy stuff. Let's do some chill stuff because there's something about riddles. You like riddles? I'm real bad at them. It makes me feel like I have poor wit. And that hurts my feelings because I think I'm a pretty witty dude. Okay, I have three for you. And if you know it, just say it. And if you don't, I'll give a couple seconds and I'll just say it. We won't make a big deal out of it. I start with the letter E. I end with the letter E. I contain only one letter, yet I am not the letter E. What am I? It's correct, but it's not the answer. An envelope. You're going to get this one. You can see me in water, but I never get wet. What am I? Dawn! Boom! The wit level. You just brought the wit level in the whole room up. Yes. Okay, last one. This is just a riddle break, and then we'll get up to serious stuff. What comes in a minute, twice in a moment, but never in 1,000 years? Oh, Joby, you're too much for us. What? Now the letter minute, moment, 1,000 years. So the riddle piece in the Samson story was cool too, right? That's good. Okay. Let's go back to thinking about place and borders. And what kind of borders are you likely to run up against this week? Which ones do you feel are being imposed on you? Which ones do you see and you choose to cross? Which ones are you unable to cross and need help? Which of them shouldn't you cross? Just a small thing. Last Wednesday night, I went with a couple friends of mine to a basketball game in Washington, D.C. If you know something about Philly sports fans, they're notoriously just out of pocket. They go other places and take over buildings. So the volume of the Philly fans in D.C. chanting "trust the process" throughout, before the game even started, throughout the whole thing, was like, it was impressive because I was one of them. If I wasn't, I'd be like, what is wrong with you? Go home. Your team, come on. Anyway, I think that you are most likely to run not just into like needing to commute to Jersey or to go to West Philly or some other kind of political border. I think most of the time we're running up against social borders. Who is related to whom? Who is not? Who are you talking to? Who are you hanging out with? And who does that affect? Who are you choosing to place yourself with that puts you in a certain even social space that might be problematic for other people? Now you can think about this in just friendships and the friend drama or the breakups and all those, the ensuing relationship complications that come from that. Also, are you being socially located with the most comfortable, most privileged people you can find where nothing bad will probably happen to you? Or are you feeling moved to go into spaces where people are not safe, where people are actually needing assistance or asking for it? What kind of those borders are you might even be empowered to do something about? Or do you think that this story is just too problematic and you should just take a chill? I mean, this week was an example of just how crossing borders inappropriately is still out of control. And I think that this building's lesson was a really good lesson about toxicity. Because most of us even, I think, talk about toxic stuff. And we're not like drinking toxic stuff on purpose, right? To just know what it is. When you experience something like the smoke that filled this building to the point where you can't breathe and you stink when you leave, that's toxic. And the kind of misogyny that goes on a regular basis in this country, and it has for a long time, is toxic. It makes us all sick. It doesn't just make people sick who get harassed or who have some sort of either sexual harassment, sexual violence put on them. It makes the offender sick. It makes the people who are part of it sick. I hope you didn't need a few million women posting with the Me Too hashtag to understand the scope of the problem or even to want to do something about it. But the questions of how, not just in the past, but even right now, it's so much easier to be complicit in allowing this problematic trend to continue in making environments where dehumanization of women is normative. My question is, what does it look like to be filled mightily with the Spirit of God, even in all of these different situations? I think that we saw it in the vulnerability of people sharing their stories, even on Twitter or Facebook or Insta. I think that when the Spirit of God is moving, tolerating jokes or comments against women slowing down, and maybe God will even lead us to stop it. But let's use our wit. Let's use our inspiration. Let's keep forming environments that aren't just safe, but they're restorative. They loosen the chains of the oppressors so we can actually be back into harmony, back into community, and even communion with God and each other. How does the Holy Spirit filling you up in a mighty way? I hope you're not just going to go kill 30 dudes and steal their clothes. I hope that you've been given something more creative, more excellent, more useful to our neighbors than that.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.